buzzer McBird on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Cats and Coach G, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to our latest edition of our podcast. I'm Andy Katz, along with my co-host Seth Greenberg, and we've got a lot to discuss. The end of Feast Week and looking ahead to the ACC Big Ten Challenge. We're going to be joined by Tom Izzo, the head coach of Michigan State, the Hall of Famer, and South Carolina head coach Frank Martin. A lot to discuss with Frank after the Gamecocks off to a great start, two of the best wins in the SEC so far if they've knocked off Michigan and Syracuse. And also, Frank's going to discuss the death of Fidel Castro. Certainly a lot to discuss with Frank Martin. But Seth, let's first look back before we go forward, and let's deal with a couple of tournament championships that were crowned over the weekend. Let's start late last night, that Sunday night in the Wooden Legacy. UCLA looking every bit the part that they've turned around their program in short order. Lonzo Ball living up to his expectations. Your impressions, please, of UCLA's victory over Texas A&M.
UCLA is a very complete basketball team. They're really special offensively, and it starts with Lonzo Ball because, you know, passing is contagious, and he started an epidemic. His ability to see plays before they develop, to pass the ball on time, on target, to advance past the ball in transition, which automatically then gets your wing guys running the floor that much harder, to get in the lane and make a scoring pass when the defense helps. He's a very good player, but let's not forget T.J. Leaf, the other freshman, because T.J. Leaf is extremely bouncy, extremely long, an excellent passer as well, very crafty along the baseline. Those two freshmen are as productive of freshmen as there are in the country, and then you've got a great core group, and you've got good depth, and you've got size, and Bryce Alford does what Bryce Alford does. He made big shot after big shot. He saved them in the Nebraska game, and he made a huge shot at the end of the Texas A&M game. So UCLA, very complete offensively, terrific execution, good concept in terms of how they're playing with their personnel. And Lonzo Ball, by the way, is a much better defender than people give him credit for. You know, he played all zone in high school. Very good hands, good feet, gets his hands on a lot of balls. Very good instinct. So this is a very good UCLA team, and they're going to continue to get better defensively.
All right, game's on the line, and you've got to pick one player to make a shot, big-time shot, mid-range, three-pointer. Where is Bryce Alford this season in terms of that list that you'd want him taking that shot?
Well, he's a world-class shooter. I mean, you know, so, I mean, are there other
not driving the basket, but a shot.
But, I mean, like, what Steve's going to do is he's going to get him off a curl. He's going to get him off some floppy action on the baseline. He's going to get him off a down screen. He's going to get him off where Ball's got the ball and off a ball screen, and he's kind of coming off some action off the weak side. And he, you know, as Raph would say, he's got onions. I mean, he's not afraid of the moment. He's played a lot of basketball. Let's face it, it's not easy being Steve Alford's son, the coach, playing at UCLA. Everything he's done the last 4 years has been scrutinized. So he's fearless. I mean, you can't say anything to him that hasn't been said to him before. He's got a thick skin and a mindset that he expects to make the shot. So, again, he's about as good as any right now at making that play.
One last thing on UCLA. The big concern, certainly, that Steve Alford, was on the defensive side. Where do you think they are in terms of defensively, especially after sort of holding off Texas A&M during that late surge?
Well, I think they've made improvements. I think they're getting better understanding of defending off personnel, defending off scouting report. Like, if you think early in that game, Tyler Davis caught it on the block and had his way. So what did they do? They started scraping down or digging down or shrinking the court off the passer, and then they have the length to close out and get to shooters. They were much better in defensive transition, which really wasn't a big issue with Texas A&M, but I just thought that their defensive mindset, they were a little bit tougher. They've got some guys who can defend. Now, I'm telling you, Ball will be a good defender. Hamilton has the potential to be a good defender. Holiday can defend the basketball, and they've got a lot of length and size up front. that can protect the rim. This team has the potential to be a very good defensive team. Defense comes down to you can't be good, great at everything. So we know that UCLA is going to be a terrific offensive team. They've got a lot of weapons. They can score. They can play fast. They have a facilitator. They got a playmaker. They got shot makers. So we know they're going to be good offensively. Now what they've got to be is they've got to be good enough defensively. And they have some versatility and they can play some zone. And they have the potential and they have the pieces to be a very good defensive team because they have length. They have rim protection. They've got athletic guys that can get deflections, that can cover, that can rotate. I expect them to be a very good defensive team before the season's out. It's going to be a process because I think, they hang their hat on the offensive end. But I think now that they've got their system in place, now that they've got a flow to what they're doing, now that they know exactly who they are offensively, I think that Steve will make defense a priority.
And UCLA is going to have plenty more opportunities to show just how good they are, especially Saturday against Kentucky. That's a 12:30 p.m. game on CBS. All right, so let's go to Orlando, where I was throughout the course of last week. Gonzaga holds off a late surge from Iowa State. Deonte Burton was sensational for the Cyclones. I can just tell you from being there courtside, I thoroughly enjoyed that basketball game, and I'm looking forward to watching these two teams develop. I think on the Zag side, Zach Collins and Killian Tilly will continue to develop, and I think they're only going to get better. They certainly have their moments where they revert back to not quite sure who's going to take the shot, and I think they allowed Iowa State to sort of win the fight, if you will. And Iowa State, as you told me in the preseason when you went and watched them play, they're not very deep, and they have Solomon Young out, so that changes, and Steve Prohm told me we're going to go smaller because of that. But I just love the way these guys compete, all seniors, and I really enjoyed watching those two basketball teams. What did you think from your vantage point?
Well, I think Gonzaga is a potential Final Four team. They have so much depth. They have so much versatility. I mean, you're talking about a team that has maturity. They got a big physical point guard, Nigel Williams-Goss, that is now a willing passer and looking to make other people better. Jordan Matthews knocks down jump shots, and they've got two front court players to me that are really special. Karnowski is maybe the best passing big in the country.
Oh, that's a great pass last night.
He is such a good passer and sees plays and understands spacing. And yet he has that little jump hook where he can put a little pressure on you and score it. Now, he was beaten to the ball down the end of that game. And then Zach Collins is bouncy and long. And when he gets acclimated to the physicality of the game and competing every play and not taking plays off and playing with a little bit better base, man, he's going to be good. And Josh Perkins' improvement has been phenomenal to me. I mean, you think about 2 years ago, people thought he was a little out of control. And, how good is he? Was he overrated? He's playing with a lot of confidence. Johnny Williams comes in and gives him great athleticism. They can change their defenses. They share the ball. The one thing is that, I thought that at that one stretch, and you're going to have games like that, they needed to fight back a little bit more. They were put on their heels, and it took them a while to kind of get their feet back underneath them. But they were playing against a very good Iowa State team. I mean, Andy, you said it. I mean, you got an elite point guard in Monte Morris. You've got two wing guys that can put pressure on you because they stretch the court and make shots. And then you got Burton, who's he's not George Niang because he can't pass it like him. But he's George Niang in that he becomes a matchup nightmare. He's George Niang because he can pick and pop, he can catch it in the mid post. But where Niang could pass it, this dude is relentless, attacking and rebounding the ball.
In the third place game, I watched two teams that are still far away, and it is still November from where they could be, but I love the fight in Florida. I'm using that word a couple times here in this podcast, but I loved it in Florida where early they had no energy. And at halftime, Mike White told me that, the Florida head coach, said he didn't know where it was. And it's kind of one of those games that you've told me about before, Seth. There weren't a lot of fans there. There was great crowds on Friday, but not for that third place game on Sunday. And they had to create their own energy, and they didn't do a good job of it. And it took them a while to get going. And they were clearly the better basketball team than Miami. And finally it showed, and their athleticism, their activity, prevailed, and I think they could end up being the second best team in the SEC, whereas Miami, as Jim Larrañaga told me, they're still searching for their offensive identity, and I'm not quite sure when they're going to get it, but they're still in search of it. What did you think when you saw those two teams?
Florida's going to be an elite defensive team. An elite defensive team. They can pressure the ball. They don't get split. They can protect the rim. They rebound on the defensive end. They have length and a mindset. Offensively, there's still a little bit of a work in progress, but they have more pieces, whether it's Allen or Casey Hill's playing really well.
Stone emerged yesterday.
And Stone from Deerfield Beach. I had a great player from Deerfield Beach, Chauncey Asbury. Those guys know how to play. Very well coached coming out of high school. I like that they have pieces. They've got pieces that can help you. And I think they're going to get better. Devin Robinson, man, his improvement, his body, his sense of purpose, much improved. Miami, the issue is they have no one who puts pressure on you at the rim right now, offensively. They really don't. The backcourt's going to be fine. I think they're going to be okay defensively because they're going to play pack line and keep you in front and contest shots. But, you know, you've got to have someone around the basket that can finish, that can make a play. Or what happens, it becomes just one big spread ball scheme with Newton and everyone playing off of him. And, they've always played slow. If they don't get in transition, they play slow and methodical, and they play off spacing. But if you don't have someone that's rolling to the rim that can catch and finish or can throw it every once in a while down to the block, who can shrink the defense so you can throw out and force a closeout, it becomes really hard. Because they're not scoring a ton of points out of their defense because they play pack line, so they're keeping it in front. They're forcing you to shoot a contested shot. It's not like they're knocking away steals and getting out in transition. So they might have to actually get more aggressive defensively. Jimmy Larrañaga, when he was at Bowling Green, they did a lot of trapping and pressing and full court defense and scramble. And they might have to go to some of that to get some easy baskets.
And one other note on Orlando, even though the results didn't show it, where Seton Hall went 1-2, and Stanford ended up, beating them in the fifth place game late Sunday night. I still have more faith in Seton Hall being an NCAA tournament team, in large part also because they're in the Big East, than Stanford. What do you think?
I like Seton Hall. I like Harrington. I like Rodriguez. I like Delgado. I like their toughness. I think that Powell's going to be fine. That was a really good win for Stanford. And Stanford has some pieces now. And, they've got some, Ree Travis is a big physical front court player. But I like Seton Hall big picture. I think they've got experience, maturity, and toughness.
And one other quick note here. We are waiting. We're going to discuss the battle for Atlantis with Tom Izzo, the head coach of Michigan State. Your quick impression of Baylor's comeback victory over Louisville. What'd you think?
I think Baylor's pretty good. I think Jonathan Motley, his versatility is really impressive. He runs the court. He can drive you from the high post. He can score it on a block. He rebounds the basketball. I think that Alaric Freeman makes enough shots. Ish Wainwright is like the X factor for them. I think that he does all the dirty work. But I'm going to say this week when we have our ACC Big Ten Challenge conversations, that Louisville's offensively challenged. They're offensively challenged. If they don't offensively, their best offense is an offensive rebound and a turnover. If they don't do those two things, they've got to find someone who consistently makes shots. I love their size. I love their length. I love their defensive integrity. I love their defensive versatility, whether they're playing man or matchup. But eventually, you got to make some shots. And, Donovan Mitchell is a really exquisite athlete, and I think he's capable. But it seems like he shoots a little bit of a hard ball. Dangadel is extremely athletic but can make a shot maybe when his feet are set. Quinton Snyder is solid but undersized and not overly explosive. I think the big question is, look, they're going to be terrific defensively. They're going to be able to rebound the ball, and they're going to be able to defend and protect the paint. But they got stuck. And it's not they got just stuck, but Baylor played well, but they got stuck because, quite honestly, they are very limited in terms of shot makers.
Well, one coach that got a eyewitness view of Baylor and the rest of the Battle for Atlantis field is Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo. Joins us now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, and the Spartans will take on Duke. this week in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. It's Wednesday night, 9:30 Eastern time on ESPN. And it has been a brutal slate, as is always the case at this time of the year. But you've had more injuries than maybe normal with Ben Carter and Gavin Schilling. So, Tom, this is the norm for you. This is what you've done. Why did you feel the need to sort of almost apologize for this kind of schedule?
You know, guys, by the way, hi, Andy and Seth. I've gotten some good things from that and bad things from that. But I think I did a poor job of explaining it. You're right, I wouldn't change who we're playing. Now, where we're playing them or in a time frame we're playing them has created three issues for us. One has been practice time. Two has been film time. And three has been conditioning. And I think those three areas, I knew the schedule and the distance was would be a problem, but those three areas I did not give enough respect to. It happened and it happened. But yesterday we had a 3-hour practice, which I never do that during the season, and it was actually good. The players enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It was, we got through some stuff. We were able to do a better job. So, you know what? It really wasn't an excuse. It's a situation that I got to learn from and figure out. But at the same time, the injuries compounded it. But we're good. We're good now. We've survived. And I interesting you listening to you talk. I thought Baylor. I agree with Seth that Louisville. I love Louisville's team. Except I don't know if they got enough offense. And Baylor has got a little bit of everything. And I thought Wichita State was really good. I mean, I know this sounds crazy. That was a very good win for us. There, the way I look at it, we've played 7 games, and I'm almost assured 5 of them will be NCAA teams.
Tom, we've talked for probably 20 years, literally 20 years, about Michigan State getting up to the elite, and you're there. And in one sense, you could argue that you guys are now, commanded to play in these big-time events where – the Armed Forces Classic, you take on Arizona. You're now a regular, obviously, from the beginning on through in the Champions Classic. So this time it's Kentucky. When it's the ACC Big Ten Challenge, they want Michigan State against the best in the ACC, whether it's Duke or Carolina. So you're matched up there. So in that sense, how, in a weird way, satisfying is it that Michigan State has arrived to where you guys are the team that is coveted to play in these elite games one after another in November?
Well, Andy, you sound like one of my practice speeches the other day, because that's exactly what I told my team. You want these things. You can either use the phrase "watch what you wish for," or you could say it is a privilege and an honor to be in that position. And I completely who we're playing is great. I wouldn't change that in a heartbeat. You got to figure out a way to balance it a little bit more, and I think I figured out a couple ways. I think Duke does a good job playing games back to back early against teams that maybe you should beat, and that way you get those games in and you get a little more practice time. I think that's one thing I've learned from this season. There'll be others that are going to make it better, but yeah, it's awesome. It's a privilege. It's an honor. It's exciting. Hell, we get to go to Duke and play down there, and I'm really looking forward to that, I'm sure, as they are.
Tom, I listened to that, your quote and all that stuff, but I mean, this is a different year for you anyway. I mean, you lose Schilling and Carter, then Didi leaves early, which, you and I talk a bunch. I mean, you recruited Didi. You when you can plan for a guy being one and done, that's one thing. That was kind of a little bit of a surprise. And then you lose your core group. And to me, your core group is Costello, Valentine, and Forbes. I mean, those guys grew with you and your program for 4 years. So, in a lot of ways, you've lost 6 core players.
And that's a hard adjustment. To make the excuse even better, you lose the 6 core, and then this summer, I was missing Tom for half of it, but Goins and McQuaid, I missed the entire summer from the last game of the season till almost the end of August with some injuries. So, that part has been different for me, and that's maybe back to Andy's point. If you want to be in that class with the Dukes and Kentuckys, and you got to learn how to do that, you know. And this is probably the youngest team I've ever had by far, and maybe one of the more grueling schedules, if not toughest as far as teams, grueling as far as all of it. But it's just another part of the process of getting to where I want the program to get. And you know, I after I said what I said, I got some feedback both ways. It did sound like an excuse, and if it was, let me apologize, because it wasn't an excuse. It was a reality that I didn't give credit to. So how can I blame my players for not adjusting to it if, you know, we're not practicing the things because we're not here to practice as much?
Tom, how different is it for you to coach this team that is missing that core group and yeah. having four freshmen in your basically seven- or eight-man rotation? What kind of changes have you made with this group coaching this team?
Well, like you, Seth, I've become a lot more patient. You know, I can tolerate two mistakes now instead of one. But, you know, I probably adjusted some. And to be honest with you, it's been fun. I'm lucky. You know, some people, you know, in this day of entitlement, I have to have what I consider a superstar in Miles that is not entitled. And that's a treat. That makes this whole thing easier. I mean, every day winning is the most important thing to him. And now knowing how to is part of the process. But it's been fun, you know, and it's kind of been fun to see the challenges. I mean, I think we could have, should have beat Arizona, and we didn't. We didn't deserve to beat Kentucky. But, you know, Baylor, we played pretty good the first half, and we didn't play as good the second half. What's been taxing for me on my own personal mind is, you know, are we fatigued? Are we not? Are we not playing hard enough? Are we not staying focused enough? I think there's a combination of all, because freshmen don't stay focused as much as the veterans do. You can adjust to three games in 3 days with Valentine Forbes, and it's harder to do that with young guys. So I think this is, as my whole program is trying to develop, and the process is still there, and I hope that never changes, because I think once you feel comfortable that you've arrived, bad things are going to happen. But the same thing happens to a coach as happens to a player. You know, some of these things I've not had to deal with. Now I'm dealing with them. In the end, it's going to make me better and us better.
You know, you talk about losing those front court guys. That's three front court guys, almost in like 21 feet of post guy. How different is it for you? In
did
terms
you just
of,
add that up?
Yeah, all by myself. I didn't even use an abacus. How different is it for you defensively? Because, you know, you've always played a certain way defensively in the post and guarding ball screens. Has that been the biggest adjustment for you in terms of your front court with just, you know, obviously Nick Ward and Goins?
You know, I think it has been, Seth. It's we always guarded ball screens, you know, with Costello. Schilling was maybe one of the best in the country. I could switch with him. I could do a lot of different things. Now you put Nick in there, and I'm almost kind of shacking things and doing things differently, and it's putting more pressure on our guards. I think it's caused us to foul a little bit more. And so, you know, we're trying to – Nick is getting better, though. I've been really pleased with him. If I looked at my freshman, he would have been the last on the list that I thought I'd play a lot coming in. And he's becoming a big part of us. So that's been encouraging, and that's what should happen. Guys step up. But it has been an adjustment for me and my staff to do things differently. But I think it's going to benefit me in the long run. At least I hope it does.
Before we turn to Duke, real quickly, Tom, just as I'm looking at your roster, based on the injuries that you have, at this point, is your roster set? I mean, do you expect to get anyone back?
You know, Schilling's, I guess, a small question mark. I said it would be into January. You know, if you watch him walk around right now, I asked him why he's not playing the other night. He's one of those rare birds like Brandon Dawson we had that, you know, had a bad ACL, and it didn't even look like there was anything wrong with him. It never swelled. It did this, did that. But, you know, Carter for sure will not be back this year. Schilling, I think, is a question mark, but we're all, I mean, a big question mark, so it won't be, I mean, evaluated in that respect for at least a month, month and a half. But then you say, do you want to waste a year for him? Because this kid really made some improvements last summer, and I thought he was going to be a big key to this year's team. So I think what you see is what you get, and what you get and what you see is getting better every time I see it. So we've got a long ways to go, but at least I'm definitely seeing some progress, and I'm seeing some guys take on new challenges, and that's made it fun and exciting for this year.
Do you see one other guy? I mean, obviously, you know pretty much Miles what you're going to get out of him. And the hardest thing in coaching is you want to know what you're going to get out of a guy.
Right.
Who's the one guy on your team that said, you know what, if I just knew this guy could deliver this each and every game, I could figure out the other a little bit better?
Well, I think Aaron Harris has been up and down like a yo-yo here a little bit, and some our fault and maybe a little bit his, but he's had a 25 and a 30-point game, and he's had a 4 and a 3-point game. So he would come to mind first, but I think that him and McQuaid, because I think you need some shooting, and McQuaid had a very good game against Baylor, but the guy that hasn't done as much that, and I think because he was injured and out with a hamstring for 3 weeks, I think you're going to see more and more to Langford. You know, I think he, at 6'5", athletic, strong, he has the best chance to improve. You're going to see Winston is getting better every day as he gets better defensively. But one guy, I guess it would be, we need a veteran, we need a senior, it would be Aaron Harris.
So let's turn to Duke. You know, the small violin for Duke here, because they've already announced that their three freshmen, I'm kidding, you know, aren't going to be able to play, you know, in your game. They still have not played. Harry Giles, Jason Tatum, and Marquise Boldman. Obviously, they've got six McDonald's All-American. But let's skip ahead here. If you win this basketball game on Thursday, what will have happened Wednesday night for you to do so?
Well, since we play them Tuesday
Wednesday.
Yeah.
I'm confused by Indiana Carolina games.
Yeah. You know, what was the second part? What do we have to do?
If you win the game,
yeah,
then on Wednesday morning, what will have happened for you to do so, do you think?
Well, I think we have to defend. Yeah, that's a tough question. I think we have to defend without fouling. I mean, their threes are impressive, but they get in the paint as good as anybody, and what they do is they draw in a lot of fouls, and those in-the-paint touches by penetration lead to easy kickouts for spot-up threes instead of coming off ball screen threes. So I think you got to pick your poison and how you cover them, and I think we got to attack a little bit of all the people that I'm talking to. I think Seth did one of the best jobs against them over the year because his guards were able to attack and get in the paint themselves. It's a different defensive Duke team, though, I think you'd both agree. Maybe not as aggressive, and partially because of injuries, because of depth. But I think some of the makeup of some of those guys, too. So he's done a good job adjusting to what he has. You got to somewhat contain so many different people. I mean, Grayson Allen has been a shadow of what I saw it when he was a freshman. You know, he's had some injuries too, and I think he's just kind of coming back. But that's scary because they're winning, and he's not been maybe his normal self.
Yeah, this is a game, Tom. Actually, you guys have, in terms of size, pretty good matchups.
Yeah, decent.
They do drive it so hard. I say that Grayson Allen kind of drives it like a heat-seeking missile, and
he does.
He drives it to contact.
Yes.
And the way the game's officiated now,
that's a positive. For us. Positive for them, not for us, yes.
Yeah. How far out do you think you can extend against a team like...
Well, that's the one thing for us. Yeah, we're not going to extend far, far. You know, I mean, we're still going to play it inside out. That's kind of the way we've done it. And but we're not going to give up. You know, if we're going to give up a three, it's going to be off a ball screen. You know, hopefully it's not off a driving kick. And the way you can stop the drives is defend by committee. and but yet not over help and things like that. I'll tell you a guy that I've been impressed with on film, and this is where Duke has really been good, you know, where Kentucky has to reload everybody. You know, Duke is always, back in the Final Four when they had those three freshmen that we played them, the little guard was the key to that game. I mean, he was just a cook. He was so good. They've got some veterans that are really good. And Jefferson, who's not great, but I'll tell you what, that kid has improved. And I think he's a big key to their team because he can score a little bit. He can defend a lot of people. They can switch five with them. You know, the other guys, of course, are going to be very, very good players. And we know that, you know, with Allen, he's Kennard, Jones. And then the freshman, Jackson, he's becoming the heat-seeking missile, you know. I mean, he's kind of like Kyrie Irving. When he gets the ball, he's trying to score, and he does a good job of it.
Well, Tom, we appreciate you taking some time out with us, as always, and we love that you play these big-time games. I know not just, you know, at programming, but
that's great.
You're sleeping well, Andy. Yes.
That's good that you're sleeping
It's good for the game.
You guys are sleeping well.
Yes,
I'm not, but
good.
I appreciate it, and it's been good. It's made our program, so hopefully we'll play well and give you guys a good game on TV, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right, thanks, Tom.
Thanks, guys.
And when we come back here on Courtside, we'll be joined by South Carolina head coach Frank Martin. But first, Seth, not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference, so it's important to know where your food comes from. And, of course, Blue Apron is a great gift for any on your holiday list. I know you got to get going on that. I do as well. Give the gift of delicious food to someone you love. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. I know that's very important for busy lives that we all lead right now. Choose from a variety of new recipes each week or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card for both you and me, and pre-portioned ingredients and can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free. That's free. Free shipping by going to blueapron.com/courtside. That's us. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/courtside. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Unbelievable week for South Carolina. Frank Martin and his Gamecocks will go to 3-0 in this building. Last time out, it was an upset of a top 10 Iowa State team. This time, they will knock off number 18 Syracuse by a final score of 64-50 as South Carolina comes to the Barclays Center and picks up another victory over a top 25 opponent to improve to 6-0.
That call was the Gamecocks IMG Sports Network. And now joining us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, Frank Martin, the head coach of South Carolina. A lot to discuss with him. And first, let's start off, you know, this is the year where everyone gets everything wrong. You know, everyone got the election wrong. Everything's wrong. And I think everyone got South Carolina wrong. You're 6-0, and you've already knocked off Michigan and Syracuse. What did the rest of us not see that clearly you did in practice?
I hope I didn't get it wrong because I really liked my team before the season. And, Andy, I don't know. We set a school record for wins last year. We returned all our guards. We returned our most talented inside guy, Chris Silva. You know, I don't think Sanders Thornwell gets the credit that he deserves. I mean, you know, we set a school record for wins. We won 11 conference games in a Power 5 league. We won more road games than two or three of the teams that were in the tournament combined. We had more top 100 wins than two or three of the teams in the tournament combined. And you return guards. And anyone that knows anything about basketball, if you got your guards back, you got a chance. And I really like our team. I liked them before the season. I liked them before the Syracuse game. I like them today. I just hope I'm not wrong along with everyone else.
So you guys actually, you know, as you just rattled off, good start last season, and for the most part were consistently good, and then had some hiccups once you got in the SEC, just a couple that prevented you from being in the NCAA tournament. What gives you that optimism that you can stay above that line this season?
Well, you know, Andy, here's what I get kind of frustrated with. When you go 11-7, and you can ask Seth, he did this for a living. When you go 11-7, in a Power 5 conference, there's no such thing as hiccups. That's normal. It's part of the deal. For a bunch of years in the Big 12, finishing over 500 was applauded in league play. And last time I checked, it's applauded in every other Power 5 conference. But, you know, we just have to be who we are. We can't worry about all that nonsense. It is what it is. If we, at the end of the year, we win enough and people give us credit, we'll get in the tournament. If not, we'll be proud of who we are every single day. We're going to gauge ourselves based on challenging one another, because people think I challenge players. I challenge players for them to challenge me to do my job better. And that's the kind of internal peer pressure that I like to create, player to player, player to coach, coach to coach, coach to player.
Frank, you talk about your guards and the toughness of your guards. And when I look at Thornwell and I look at Notice and even Dozier, his improvement this past year has been unbelievable. Don't you think that it really shows on the defensive end? Where do you see your team? You've had great defensive teams, whether it was in high school, whether it was at Kansas State, and now at South Carolina. Do you think that your guys have finally bought into that mindset of taking guys out, and how has that developed?
Well, Greeny, as you know, that it takes time. Freshmen don't understand. I say this all the time. In the culture that we've created in grassroots, where there's less practice and more games, that means that there's less structure. Meaning that everyone tries to play off the dribble. This new full, everyone outside the paint just dribble drive the ball. You'd think guys would be better at guarding the basketball because it's the way everyone plays at the high school level. But they come to college and they're not prepared for that. They have to learn how to do that, and it takes time. Guys being in the weight room, guys learning how to study film so they can understand player tendencies so they can do a better job of preparing. That's what you see when you see Thornwell and Notice. They've been with our strength coach for 4 years. They've been in our practices for 4 years. They've been in every single scouter report meet you can imagine. So they're prepared. Now you take Dozier, who's a heck of a player, that now, he learned all that last year. People tried to criticize him last year, and it drove me nuts. He was a starting point guard on a team that set a school record for wins. You don't do that by mistake. You do that because you're pretty good at what you do. And now we got depth. We've got on our front line, we're very young, but we're so athletic, and we can do different things defensively. But at the end, it's a credit to those kids. They bought in. They believe in each other. They compete. We've created depth because of our practices, and now we can go out and be able to not play guys 36 minutes, maybe play a little less, meaning that their effort while they're in the game is a little bit better.
Yeah, you talk about that jump players make from freshman to sophomore year. Dozier's been, I think, terrific. But Chris Silva seems like I've watched your teams play a long time. He's your type of guy in terms of effort and the energy he plays with. What does Silva bring that's a little different maybe than the front court guys you had a year ago?
Well, there's a level of athleticism. My two seniors from Lithuania last year, they were rock solid. They were grown men. They understood how to play. But there were certain plays that I don't care how hard they tried, they couldn't make. Chris can make those plays. Here's the beauty of Chris. Chris was a top 100 player. Chris was a high-level recruit. I've coached Chris hard from day one. That kid comes in every single day and wants more. That's why I'm so excited about him. He's only been playing basketball for 3 years. This is year number four, so he's played it for three. The progress that he's made over the last 3 years is phenomenal. And with his athleticism, his desire, his toughness, sky's the limit for him.
Frank, I first met you at Miami High a long time ago, and the world was a little bit different. And your story is kind of like the American dream in a lot of ways in terms of where you started and where you are right now, which you've basically done by yourself. And I know that this past weekend was a tremendous weekend in a lot of different ways for you. And you said to me on a text message that you had your whole family with you in Brooklyn and had a time for reflection. What do you mean by that with everything that's gone on in Cuba in the last week?
Yeah, Seth, before I answer your question, let's say when it was. When the University of Miami used to play at the James L. Knight Center in a half auditorium, and you probably, you know, for everyone who talks about how much money coaches made, I've got to guess you didn't make a whole lot of money while you were working to revive that program. But it was a beautiful. What's that?
You're right about that.
Yeah, well, it was a beautiful weekend, you know, from a winning standpoint. But being around my family and my wife's family, who are also immigrants, like we all are in this country, you know, being around them, and then finding out about the Castro news, and then being able to reflect, because you know, we reflect out of joy. We don't reflect out of sorrow. Our joy is that we live in this country. Yes, we have our flaws here. Yes, we have our issues here. Yes, there's a lot of things that need to get better, but we're all allowed to express ourselves so we can make it better. And we have to learn how to coexist with each other so we can make it better. We've made progress. It's nowhere near where it needs to be. But when I hear people in this country applaud Castro, it makes me sick to my stomach. Because there's not, you know, you can argue that him and Hitler are the two biggest tyrants that we've had in the last 100 years. It's what he has done to demean people, to prevent people. Think about this, Seth. You know, everyone's talking about he's reformed education. No, he chooses who he educates so they can help him remain in power, so they can help his government remain strong. The rest of the people, he wants to keep them ignorant because you can't. And when I mean ignorant, I don't mean uneducated. I mean not knowing how the rest of the world has it, not knowing how people have rights in other places. Because if people did know, then you'd have the situation that you had back in the 70s where he had uprising after uprising to take over him because everyone did know what was going on. And then he, you know what he did? He created the Mariel boat lift himself because his jails were overcrowded because anyone that said anything got put in the firing line or got put in jail. So he said, okay, I'm going to let you take an uncle on this boat and I'm going to charge you so much, but you're taking these three other people. Those three other people were people that were in jail, and that's kind of the way he emptied his jail. So it's for anyone to applaud anything that man stood for, that disgusts me. For my family, it was a moment of joy. It was a moment of joy because we lost half our family. My grandmother lost her husband. My family went from my grandmother, who was a housewife, went to working 12, 14 hours a day at a factory. But you know what? This country gave us a chance. They didn't judge us that we didn't speak English. We didn't get judged because our skin color is a little different than whatever people want to look at. We were given an opportunity to live in freedoms that have been taken away from my family. And now my uncle's gone from carrying boxes as a high school senior at the Port of Miami to being one of the most influential people in the Port of Miami. My mother on her own fought and raised my sister and I. And now, you know, here I am, a guy that got a public school education for free, by the way, at the high school level, paid his own way through college. Now I'm leading a basketball team for the University of South Carolina. You know, so we reflected in a great, great way.
Frank, what was your earliest memory of Fidel Castro?
1972, Andy. My grandmother, who's the one that taught me to play basketball, tremendous sports enthusiast. I was sitting there as a six-year-old watching the Olympics with her and watching her cry when Teofilo Stevenson won the gold medal in boxing. You know, watching her cry when Alberto Juan Torena won the gold medal in track and field. And then the one that never left me was watching her cry when the Russians cheated the United States in 1972. Because of the Russians, Castro became powerful and was not Cuba would not be liberated because of his alliance with Russia, because of Russian support of Castro. My grandmother never forgave the Russians for that, and I'll never forget her crying. And something, I was a young kid, and I had no understanding why at the time. It resonates with me strongly now.
So it's still run by his brother Raul Castro. And Fidel obviously had not been in power as he was aging and ultimately dying. How do you think, though, his death will change Cuba?
Well, that's what we don't know, because as long as he was alive, the loyalties, you know, when the tyrant is in charge, he doesn't keep people around that are not loyal to the nth degree to him, or he hasn't killed. But now that he's dead, will Raul change his views? Will Raul, now that Fidel's not around, feel liberated to do things differently? The people around Raul, their lieutenants, I have no idea. And I don't care who governs. I really don't. I just want people in Cuba to have rights. I want them to live in freedom. I want them to be able to be human beings and not be treated like, you know, herded cattle in a farm somewhere.
And how do you think this will affect sports as it relates to Cuban-U.S. relations, and whether or not, you know, you'd want to continue to sort of open relations from a basketball perspective?
I mean, nothing would mean more to me than Cuba being free, being some kind of a democracy, and me to one day represent Cuba, whether it be in a basketball clinic or a coaching fraternity or a camp or maybe even involved with their national team if need be. Just out of loyalty for my family, for my grandmother, for her roots, for what they educated me to be for. With all that said, though, I'm a proud American, Andy. I would love Cuba to be free, just like 99% of the countries in our part of the world are. I'd love for Cuba to have rights, the Cuban people to have rights. I'd like for them to be able to get on social media and be able to communicate with people they don't know so they understand how others have it in the world. That's all I want. I want what's right. And, and Cuba's a beautiful country. I've seen it through my family's eyes. I'm dying for it to be free so I can see it with my own eyes.
You know, Frank, you have such an amazing perspective because of the life that you've lived. And you know, everyone has to make choices. And your choice was to move forward as opposed to kind of look back. Where you came from in Miami right now, where do you think just the mindset of the community and the city is with this weekend's situation?
It's a moment of joy, Seth. Seth, you lived it. You were down there. You came in my neighborhood. You know what it was like. I don't speak as an outsider looking in. I don't speak, on anything but what I've seen with my own eyes because of what I lived. You know, it's a community that raised me. It was a community that I turned around and became a teacher in so I can help the next young one like me. There were difficult times. It wasn't easy. But the one thing that helped us all was love and the passion to move forward. We didn't sit around and say, well, you know, we want our government to give us things for free because we were cheated out of our own country. No, my family, like most of the Cuban families that came back in the 60s and 70s, you know, that raised me, they came to this country thankful that they get an opportunity to be able to be treated like a human being, that they can own property, that they can maximize. If they chose to work 20 hours a day, they can make more money. It's those are the opportunities that this country gives you. And my family embraced those, believed in them. They taught me to believe in them. That's why when I look back, I'm extremely thankful that this country gave my family a chance, because if my grandmother had chosen the path that one of her brothers took, who knows what I'd be doing in Cuba right now? Who knows if I even would have been born? Because my parents met here, not there. It's an unbelievable thing, and that's why when our family reflects and I say my grandmother's ashes were smiling, it's because that brought us an unbelievable sorrow back in 1959. It brought the death of my grandfather. It brought a lot of negative things at the moment, but it also opened up the doors to come to this country and for all of us in my family and my wife's family to move forward and just enjoy an unbelievable experience that we call life in the United States.
And I encourage everyone to go to Twitter, actually, and check out Frank's timeline, @FrankMartin_SC. He's been outspoken in really a beautiful way about these events over the last week of the death of Fidel Castro. Frank, as always, we really appreciate your insight on the game and outside of the game and joining us here on Courtside. Thank you.
Appreciate you guys.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right, guys, we're back from a good Thanksgiving break. I hope you both enjoyed it. I know the student section did, and they got some good questions in here for us, like this one from who, Seth?
Ivy Kelly won.
Absolutely.
Not a Drew Abide?
Well,
don't worry, have a little patience.
All right, sorry.
You got to kill the lead, guys. All right, sorry. Unbelievable. You just can't help yourself.
But ID Kelly writes in with the hashtag student section and says, Virginia killed Iowa. Is Virginia that good, or is Iowa that bad?
I don't think Iowa's that bad, to be honest with you. I think that Tyler Cook is going to be a very good player. I think that Peter Jok is playing with tremendous confidence. Virginia is so efficient, and we always talk, it's funny, kind of, we always talk about them defensively, but I think we don't appreciate what they do offensively. And even without Austin Nichols, Jared Reuter and Jack Salt, terrific screeners, both of them been a little bit more aggressive offensively. In fact, if you add up their stats, they're averaging about 12 points and 9 rebounds, which is really good for those 40 minutes. Lennon Perrin is doing a terrific job of running their team. They've got a lot of different guys that can score. They have one guy averaging double figures. Everyone else is averaging like between 9 and 7. I think Virginia is very good because they own their tempo with their defense, not their offense. And then offensively, they have a lot of different guys that can make a play and score. I think they're very good.
You know, it's amazing. 51 points, 32 points, 38 points, 34 points, 41 points, 52 points. That's what they've given up so far through 6 games. Ohio State is next in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. So Virginia just locking teams down. I would say Virginia is very good and that Iowa is not that bad. I agree with Seth.
All right, Andy.
And I'll tell you, a future ACC Defensive Player of the Year is Dakita.
And by the way, Seth will be on the call for the Virginia-West Virginia game on Saturday, 2 o'clock on ESPNU. So check that out.
That's what I call a professional plug, Andy.
Yes.
The next one
for my guy
is for, speaking of your guy, you wanted a question from the Drew Abides. Well, here it is. He's at Drew_Allen14. And Drew would like to know, besides the possibility of marquee W's, what are the biggest team benefits in playing holiday tournaments?
Well, I will allow Seth to answer that first since he's done it, and then I'll add on.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. One, it's during the holiday season. You're taking your team away, and you're going to get a chance to spend time with each other and really kind of bond and share that, have a shared experience, whether it's Thanksgiving or the holidays, which in a lot of times is really good. You're void of distractions in that, you know, you're at this at this location, which is important. You're getting a chance to play against 3 teams in 3 or 4 days that play all different types of style of basketball. So you're exposing your team to different types of basketball, different levels as well. You know, if you're a high major team, you're going to probably end up with a high major, a mid major, and a low major game, which is kind of it's good for your team in that you can develop your team as the tournament goes along. You can also, it's a fact-finding mission for your team. You're finding out what your strengths and weaknesses are. You're getting a chance to look at different combinations so that when you come back from the holiday, you can then kind of have a better understanding of what you need to do moving forward. And then finally, it's most times a destination, whether it's Orlando or Bahamas or Hawaii or whatever. And it's kind of a little bit, in a way, is a little bit of a reward for your team. You know, if they're going to have to go away and they're going to be away from their families, they're going to get to have, a pretty enjoyable experience. So I've always found that it's really been a good experience. It brings your team closer together. It gives you a better understanding of your team and its personality, and it also gives you you have a blank canvas at the beginning of the season. You're starting to fill in the blanks of that canvas and better understand your team.
Well, I love it because, first of all, I think it takes these teams out of their comfort zone and really also puts them in a position where they can, you know, meet other players, spend time. I mean, I see these guys interact. The coaches, you know, Steve Prohm of Iowa State was telling me it's the first time he's really sat down with Mark Few of Gonzaga. They built a little relationship, spent some time together. I mean, these things don't happen normally during the season. They might happen in July, but you're sort of out there competing against, you know, as you're evaluating the same players. So I like that that aspect happens for a lot of these tournaments. All right, Josh, one more for us.
Last one from Sean Iske. At Sean Iske uses the hashtag student section to ask, who are the real Georgetown Hoyas? Are they the team that lost to Arkansas State, or are they the team that beat Oregon?
I don't know. Seth, do you?
I think that this is a team in transition. It's a transition in that they're looking to push it and play faster, although when they get into their half court, they're actually running very similar to their same sets. And I don't want to hear about the Princeton offense because everyone runs the Princeton offense or elements of it. It has nothing to look. It's chin action, which is basically a back screen to a ball screen. It's a little high post base guards to the baseline. It's not your father's Princeton offense. So, like, for all the people that lose their minds on that, I would be less worried about that and more concerned about how hard we're playing. All right, one game we give up 19 offensive rebounds, and next game I think we turn it over like 24 times. All right, that's a concern more than anything else. I mean, to me, consistency in your effort, the talent's going to be there. It's consistency in your effort that is going to be the key to this basketball team. And they've got to play harder, more consistently. And they've got to understand it's not just about outscoring people. And, you know, we get so caught up in the mindset of outscoring people. It's about getting stops. It's about getting traffic rebounds. It's about being strong with the basketball. Now, look, Arkansas State is a good team. They beat a very good Lehigh team. They beat a very good Chattanooga team. They beat Georgetown. I mean, they're not a bad basketball team. All right? But for Georgetown to get where they need to go, their identity needs to be start with playing harder, more consistently. And I think then when that happens, you'll see their team improve.
Listen, everybody, we appreciate the consistent great questions from Sean, ID Kelly 1, Drew Abides. But don't miss out on your opportunity to get involved. Submit questions and commentary. Use the hashtag student section.
And before we get out of here, Seth, one other quick point that I want to just bring up and get your quick opinion on. Indiana will bring back the 1981 team like they've done before with the 76 team last season. They brought back the 87 team in 2011. They invited everyone who was part of that team to come back to Indiana, and that includes head coach Bob Knight. Not expected to show up, didn't show up in those previous times. I would just say this. I think it's time, and I think he would be surprised by the adulation he would receive if he walked into that building. He won't do it. He's being stubborn about it. I don't get it. You know, you're getting older. Put it behind you and don't harbor all that anger and bitterness. The people that fired you are either passed away or gone. I think it's time to move on, but it's a shame. It's a shame that he won't show up again.
Well, to me, it's a shame for those players because they had a shared experience with Coach that is so special. And they had a special bond with Coach. And, you know, forget about your personal feelings. How important would it be for those players to have Coach walk out there one last time in Assembly Hall and receive a fitting farewell? And for them to be part of that farewell and share in that experience, one more shared experience for players and coaches together. And if you think about it, Andy, you think about the great traditional great programs out there. You know, you think about the Carolinas and the Dukes and obviously Indiana's and UCLA's. This is the only one where you have this complete separation because of the way it ended for Coach Knight. And it hurts me as a coach and a guy that really appreciated his players. And, you know, people really, it's hard to understand the real relationship you have with them because your relationship with your players changes from when you recruited them to when you coach them to when they leave. And it's almost a lot of times it's after they've been gone a couple of years, the light bulb goes on and they basically say, you know, the old man was pretty smart. All those lessons he talked about, all those things, I'm using those same things when I'm raising my children. I'm sharing those same stories. So I would love to see Coach come back. I think it would be very emotional, but I think it would be really a, when you talk about closure and a shared experience for a team and a coach, I think it would be just, it would be phenomenal.
Yeah, there's no question those players have loyalty to him and to the university. All right, that'll wrap up this edition of Courtside. As always, you can follow Seth on Twitter at Seth on Hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at ESPN Andy Katz to get our podcast, as always, to subscribe to it. Go to iTunes. Also, rate us. We always enjoy that. And go to that ESPN app and click on the headphone icon to find it. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Katz and Coach G. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts. Courtside with Katz and Coach G.